I was talking to my friend the other day about her plans for the summer, and she was telling me how their family loves to go to the family cottage. There's enough room for her and her family and her sister and their family and the grandparents, of course, which is their place. But it can feel a little crowded even though there's enough beds for everyone. And I said, oh yeah, you like more space when you're on vacation. And then she said, well, you know, the real issue is she has a 13-year-old who not everyone appreciates all that much. This kid doesn't fit into the mold of how others in the family expect them to behave. One of the things I was happy to relate to my friend, who happens to know our son Luke quite well, they're both musicians, I told her that our kids, at various times in their lives, have been like that. They have not always fit into the expectations that others would have of them. And when they didn't behave in ways that others expected them to because of ADHD or anxiety or other characteristics that make them unique people, it was hard sometimes. People were critical of them, of our parenting. It made it awkward. But as they grow and spread their wings, which they are still doing, and become more fully formed people, they can be amazing, beautiful people, and they are a joy to know. I wonder, can you remember a time in your life when you think, oh wow, was I ever awkward back then? Can you think of a time, maybe more than one, like me? In my life, there are many stages when I would say, oh, that was awkward. I don't really want to see pictures of myself at that time. I don't really want to think about the stuff I used to say and do at that time. But whether it's a particularly bad class photograph or remembering our early efforts to date or to drive or to do almost anything in the early days, we all have those times in our lives when our wings were shriveled up and not at all beautiful. Some of us might still be embarrassed or even ashamed of what we were like years ago, or perhaps not so long ago, maybe even right now. Our lives are much longer and more complex than a butterfly. So we have many stages in our life of change and transformation and development. But whenever it was or is, we all have those awkward, kind of ugly stages in our lives when we haven't unfolded our wings yet. And our full beauty is quite hidden. We might even appear rather ugly to some, and we certainly can't fly yet. But just like that butterfly, this butterfly, we certainly can and do fly eventually. The unfolding takes time and patience. Just look at Simon Peter. Our Bible reading today starts out with Jesus asking his disciples what people are saying about him. it seems that even Jesus is interested in his social media image. Of course, social media in those days was all word of mouth. But when Jesus asked them, "Who do people say I am?" First there was silence. And then Peter is the only one, as far as we know, who speaks up. Peter, the impetuous and bold one, says, "You are the Christ, the Holy One, the child of the living God." His enthusiastic clarity evoked an enthusiastic response from Jesus. "Blessed are you, Simon, son of Jonah," said Jesus. "You are Peter, the rock. And upon this rock I will build my church. And not even the gates of hell will be able to stand against it." Wow. That's some powerful words. That's quite the name that Jesus gives Simon. From that day on, Simon has a new name. Peter. Sometimes we hear them together, Simon Peter. But mostly we hear about Peter from then on. And we know that Peter goes on to become the great leader of the early Christian community. But not before he says some pretty dumb things along the way. And then he even denies knowing Jesus when he's questioned during Jesus' trial. Peter's wings were certainly not fully extended yet, not by a long shot. He is the one who constantly puts his foot in his mouth, and he is also beautifully the one who took steps that the other disciples wouldn't take. He's impetuous. He would step out of the boat onto the water to walk toward Jesus before his anxiety got the best of him. He's the one who struck out with a sword to defend Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane, only then, a few moments later, really, to deny that he even knows Jesus. But Jesus saw this impetuous, awkward fisherman and saw a beautiful butterfly who would give inspired leadership to the early community of Jesus' followers. Peter embodies transformation and is a good model for us all. He is beautifully complex, and knowing his story is helpful for us to recognize our own humanity and our own complexity. We really don't see some of Peter's best transformations until after Jesus has been taken up. It's only later that we find Peter beginning to proclaim a radical gospel of inclusivity, to include even the Gentiles of all people. If we only saw Peter with a fixed mindset, the way he was earlier on, his aggression, his impatience, we might dismiss him as a fool. But Jesus recognized Peter's passion and strength and saw something deep within him that was worth placing his future hopes of the beloved community of believers on his shoulders. Imagine what we could do if we looked at each other with the same mindset. If we could look at those troublesome grandchildren with the same mindset. If we could look at our neighbors with the same mindset. The way that Jesus saw Peter, the way God sees us, full of beauty, wisdom, and power, just waiting to be unwrapped. This story of Jesus naming Simon is a beautiful and hopeful reminder that none of us are stuck where we are as human beings. We are all in the process of becoming, much like a butterfly, unwrinkling its wings, on the verge of taking flight. We all have those times in our life when our wings are shriveled up and not at all beautiful. Jesus saw Simon for who he was, including all that beauty and flight still folded up within him. So let's ask ourselves, what new name does Jesus give us, each one of us, and all of us together as a community? What new name is Jesus trying to tell us about? This past Thursday, we marked Red Dress Day. Some have renamed it Redress Day, when we remember the thousands of Indigenous women and girls who have gone missing or found murdered in recent history. In the last 30 years, there are close to 1,500 documented cases of missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls. And the estimates of undocumented cases makes the number closer to 4,000. And most of them are young girls and women and two-spirited folks. It is truly an epidemic here in Canada, and it's similar in many other places in the world. As you can see in the slide, Indigenous women and girls are 12 times more likely to be murdered or missing than any other woman in Canada, and 16 times more likely than Caucasian women, white women. It's appalling. This is a map of Canada, and you can see the places where, in yellow and red, where there is a high density of cases of missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls and two-spirited folks. You can see they're clustered around cities. It's not just out in the country that this is happening. In fact, I mean, it certainly does happen out there, but do you notice what the biggest yellow circle is? That's Vancouver. There's Winnipeg, there's Edmonton, Toronto, and many other places. We'll go to the next slide. And it's not just the ones that go missing or are murdered. 73% of gender diverse and two-spirited Indigenous people experience a form of violence. Why? Why are the rates so high? Well, it's about stereotypes that deny the dignity and worth of women in general, but especially Indigenous women and girls, make some men think they can get away with it, that they can just use and abuse. Another one is government policy for many decades that impoverished and divided Indigenous families and communities, leaving Indigenous women so vulnerable. And we know that many police forces have not instituted the measures such as training and protocols and accountability to eliminate the bias in how they respond to indigenous women and families. So many of these cases have gone uninvestigated with little or no action. It's like people have just come to accept that this is normal somehow. Now, some of you on your way in today might have been handed a card with a pin on it. And if you didn't get one on your way in, you can get one on your way out if you would like. This is one thing. The Red Dress campaign, you may have seen the red dresses in front as you came in the sanctuary or out in front of the building this week. That's one way to raise awareness and to express solidarity. Something simple that we can all do is be part of the Moose Hide campaign. And you can read more about it, but it is a simple way for us to show our support and our concern. But most importantly, for us to humble ourselves and to commit ourselves to being part of a society that does better. And so there's a day this week coming up on the 11th when you're especially invited to not only wear the Moose Hide pin, but to think about fasting for that day. It's Thursday. Fasting is part of almost every spiritual tradition in the world. It certainly is part of the Christian tradition that I don't like very much. But on Thursday, I will gladly go hungry for one day to help me think all day long about missing and murdered indigenous women and girls and two-spirited folks and all those who live with violence in our society, in our own communities. We invite you to join us in this small effort for us to listen and to learn and to act. This is part of the transformation that we are invited to make as a society, as a community. The Moose Hide campaign, just for your information, is now a nationwide movement. It started out really as an effort to involve men and boys in taking responsibility and being part of the solution. Wearing the Moose Hide pin shows our commitment to honor and respect and protect women and children and others who might be vulnerable in our lives, and to speak out against gender-based and domestic violence. We can value each other better. We can protect one another better. We can bring justice, and we can see others' beauty and our own. I want to close this reflection by inviting you to meditate with me on a poem by Steve Garnass Holmes called Your Name. I bet God doesn't call you Robert or Elizabeth. The beloved has a name for you no one else has given you. A name no one else has. No one. Better than a nickname or even a heartfelt term of endearment, the the name of your soul declared to the universe in the language of mystery, pronounceable only by God. When you pray, it is for that name you are listening. When God speaks your name, it is as when God says, "Let there be light." It is the name of who you alone are created to be. The name by which God knows you, calls you into life. Listen for the silence in which that name is spoken. It takes time. It's a deep and wide silence. Listen for that name. Let the one who alone calls you by name lead you out and come out. Amen.